like a little bit less from the first session and more for this. Okay, today's topic is officially called Why Does Hashem Allow Bad Things to Happen to Good People? Before I start discussing this question, which has been discussed throughout the ages, there's an entire Sefer of Tanakh, Sefer Iyov, that discusses this. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara says in Brachas, asked this question. Many people throughout the ages have asked the question, and we got 25 minutes to answer this very, very difficult question. First, I will proceed my remarks by explaining that I'm not in any way, shape, or form trying to explain why in any particular situation something happened to any particular person. I'm just giving general ideas that the Mefarshim, the various commentaries, have explained about why this phenomena seems to exist. I don't expect anyone after this year to go over to somebody and say, oh, well, I know why things are happening bad to you because Rabbi Klapholz told me that it's because this. I'm not going ahead and pointing to any things. I'm just giving general ideas. I think it's something which is important for us to internalize before we go through a situation so that we for ourselves are able to deal with any difficulties that arise. Basically, if we have to think about the question is based on certain premises, and we'll try to explain how the different Mefarshim answer up the question. The question is based on three basic assumptions that Judaism believes in. Assumption number one, which Judaism believes in, is number one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is omniscient. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything. God knows everything. Good. That's probably a different lesson. How do we know this? Okay. Number two. We also believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is omnipotent. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the power to do everything. He has the wherewithal and he has the ability, and nothing stops him from doing what he wants to go ahead and do. Number three, we also believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just. He's fair. He's a little fair. Fair. Everything that Hashem does is fair and just. That having been said, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything that's going on in this world, and Hashem has the ability, and nothing stops him from doing whatever he wants, and Hashem is just, he is fair, so why does it seem that seemingly bad things happen to seemingly good people? That's the question. That does not seem to be just, that does not seem to be fair. To answer this question, there are two basic approaches. Approach number one is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinite. We are finite. We are human beings. We have a limited brain. We can't always appreciate and understand deeper reasonings of a higher being. And therefore, to a certain extent, it's a little bit of a chutzpah to go ahead and ask such a question. Now, this is fine for many people. Many people are happy with that. Don't ask the question, because Hashem has his ways. He understands. But many people want to have a little bit more of a justification. And we're going to go into a little bit of justification. But just to give a little bit of a mushel to explain that first approach. I remember going back a couple of years before I was in DRS, my first 4 years of married life, I was in Eretz Yisrael. And I was zocheh to have a son born there in Eretz Yisrael. He's now 19 years old. My goodness, it's incredible how he catches up to my age. I'm only 25 still, you know, and he's just catching up. The first year that he was born, in Eretz Yisrael, the way that it works is when you take your child to get various vaccinations and shots, you don't go to the doctor to get it. You go to this little health clinic called Tipat Chalav. Tipat Chalav. My wife asked me, my wife doesn't do so well with shots and blood is not her thing. So she asked me if I would be so kind to take my son to get his shot. Okay. My son apparently had gotten a couple of shots in the past. When he saw the health technician coming over with this big needle, is about 6 months, maybe 9 months, whatever it was, old, he started getting a little bit, shall you say, not so happy about this. He started thrashing around. The technician said, "You'll have to hold your son down." That's how they do it in Eretz Yisrael. You hold your own child. So there I was. My son is like, "I'm not going to go ahead and get shot by this needle." And I had to go ahead and hold him. I'm holding his hands. I'm holding his legs so he won't go ahead and be moving at all. So they can just give him the shot one time and it'll work. And I remember the look. My son looked up at me like, "You betrayed me. You're with the enemy. They're trying to go ahead and hurt me and you're doing this? Ah, chutzpah, what are you doing?" And I held him. I remember, I'm going to explain to a six-year-old, it's okay. It's okay. "What do you mean it's okay? I'm getting shot." And then after he got the shot, Baruch Hashem, then he cuddled up with me. Baruch Hashem. But he understood. Listen, I don't understand what my father's doing. But Mistama, he's a loving father. He generally takes care of me pretty well. Mistama, there's a reason and there's a logic which I don't understand. That's one approach. And it's definitely a valid approach. But we're going to try to go ahead and explain something that might appeal to our logical minds as well. To understand and to explain things to justify activities, there are basically always two different ways that you can justify doing something. One way that you can justify doing something is based on past. One way to justify actions is based on anticipated future. Let's explain. Let's say I want to go ahead and start working out a little bit more. I'm a little bit, you know, like I'm getting a little bit flabby. I want to go ahead and build up my muscles a little bit, keep up with my DRS Talmidim. I have to go ahead and work out. So I see in the paper a person advertising a personal trainer. Personal trainer. I say, okay, I'll work him out. I'll try it out for a week. Being a very wealthy DRS Rebbe, no money's no object. The trainer says he wants $1,000. No problem. For 1 week, no problem. $1,000. So we write up a contract. You go ahead and help me work out for a week, an hour a day for a week, $1,000 at the end of the week. Good. I'm ready. It's the end of the week, Thursday night. I'm going to meet him on Friday for my last session, and I'm going to give him the $1,000. After all, we made a contract. He kept his word. Gewaldic. That's past justification. We made a contract. He did something. I reward him for that which he went ahead and did. That's one possibility. Another possibility might be based on future justification, based on something in the future. Once again, I'm a very, very wealthy DRS Rebbe. Somebody comes over to me and says, "Can you please give me $200? Why? I need it for some medication. Nebuch, I need this medication. $200 I need. So I say to myself, listen, I don't owe him anything in the past, but he'll probably use the $200 better than I am. I can view it as stuck. It's a nice thing to go ahead and do. So I'll give it to him. It's justified based on the future. He'll use it much better than I. Well, I'll probably just blow it. I'll just probably use it buying more Svarim, whatever it is. And so he probably use it in a way that could save his life that much better. Thank you. So the question is, we have past justification and we have future justification. Sometimes the two come in conflict. Let's say on that Thursday night, back with the personal trainer, I didn't do a Google search on this guy. I didn't find out anything about his past. And all of a sudden I get a phone call, not on my cell phone because I don't have one, and my home phone, I pick it up, strange number, I pick it up, psychiatrist of my personal trainer. She says to me, "Don't give him the $1,000. Why not? This guy has just confessed to me that when he gets your $1,000, he's going to go ahead and buy all this assorted weaponry. He's going to come into DRS and he's going to try to chas v'shalom do a terrorist attack on the entire place. We're not nervous. We got a safe place right there. Back corner. Everyone will just get into the safe place. Well, we're safe." But let's say now, on the one hand, now I'm in a dilemma. On the one hand, I made an agreement. Based on the past action, I'm just that I have to give it to him. On the other hand, based on future, maybe I shouldn't give it to him. And obviously, in such a situation, a person has to go ahead and think to himself, what outweighs what? basically all of the approaches, and there are tons and tons of approaches, and I'll recommend a couple of svarim in English, gentlemen. This is a fantastic book. Many people don't know about this. It's called The Informed Soul by Rabbi David Gottlieb. I don't know if it's still in print. It's an art scroll book, but it's not a regular art scroll book. This is really, really fantastic, fantastic. Basic Machshavas Yisrael. He has a chapter on suffering, fantastic. There's a book called, in English also, Search Judaism. We have it in the Beis Medrash. This one is courtesy of Shir Yashav. We also have the Sefer On the Derech, has a chapter on suffering as well, by Rabbi Y.Y. Rubinstein. And then you have the classics, Michta Meliom, or Nevuchim, Chovas Lavavas, Rosh Hasharan, etc., that all discuss this issue. Well, I did a lot of research in the past couple of days on this topic. And basically, to sum it all up in 25 minutes, or less, now I'm down to 15 minutes, if I have to sum up all of the answers, basically they sum up into one of two frameworks. It's either based on past justification or based on future justification. What do I mean by that? Why do bad things happen to good people? The approaches will either be the good people are not so good, and therefore, based on their actions in the past, Hashem is justified in doing what he does. We'll discuss that in a second. Or the things that you look at as being bad are not necessarily so bad. Not necessarily so bad. Let's explain. As far as past justification, some of the Mefarshim explain like this. We don't know necessarily. You look at a person, he seems out in the open as being a great guy. He comes to shul, he davens. He's always very friendly. Maybe he's even on Hatzolah. He helps out a lot. You know, whenever you need him for a community thing, he's involved. Yeah. Seems like a great guy. And a person says, how can such a bad thing happen, such suffering happening to such a person? But do you know what's going on behind closed doors? Not necessarily. Unfortunately, just recently, a friend of mine just had a daughter who was engaged, and all of a sudden it broke up. They were about to get married, a couple of weeks away from the marriage, and it broke up. He was talking to me about it, and all of a sudden, things came out. All of a sudden, things coming out and out and out. Didn't know who this person was, this future son-in-law was. I met him at the Vart, seemed like a nice enough guy. Even on, you know, one Shabbos morning, I weren't with him, and it seemed like a very, very sweet guy. But you don't necessarily know what's going on. Number two, the second approach, also based on past, we're going to do that quickly because I want to focus more on the future. Second is that a person, you know, generally will say, he's a good guy, he's done enough. But we don't know, maybe there's some area that he's really lacking in. The Gemara says in Shabbos, that in the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, there were some people who were tzaddikim, they were perfectly good people. And yet the Gemara says that they were slated to be killed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said they're going to be punished. Why? Because even though they were perfectly good for themselves, but they didn't go ahead and give tochacha, they didn't warn other people to go ahead and improve their ways. So the person might be missing in a certain area of his avodas Hashem. Maybe he's a good davener, he's a good learner, but he's not so good in bein adam lechaveiro, or vice versa. There could be some area that he's lacking in, and therefore Hashem is justified in giving him the suffering, the punishment, for that aspect. The third approach, also within the past, is, if you think about it, no person is perfect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is medaktik b'tzadikim k'chud asara, the Gemara says. Why is it that Hashem is so medaktik k'chud asara? If you think about it, I can give a very easy muscle from my teaching career. You have a student who goes ahead and he's very, very smart. He has tremendous capabilities. And he gets, let's say, a 90 on a test. He should be getting 105 on the test. He gets a 90. Am I happy with that? Not really. I feel like he's not really pushing himself as much as he should. Somebody else might get a 90. He really worked so hard, and that's what he should be able to get. He got the 90. I'm very happy with it. So you look at the actions of two people. It seems like they're doing the exact same thing, but we have to judge each person based on his abilities, based on his, you know, his kochos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him. And therefore, we can't necessarily judge. If we see somebody who seems to be good and he seems to be doing all kinds of good things, it could be that Hashem is justified based on the past, either because we don't really know, or there are areas that he's lacking, or based on his abilities, he should be doing more. There are more things that fit into this category. If you're into the Kabbalah, it talks about the Gilgulim, maybe he did something wrong in some other life, etc. We're not going to go into that. What I want to focus on for the last 10 minutes is more on future justification. Assuming that the person, Taka, really is good. He's really very, very fine. And we know about him. And he's keeping his abilities. Why might it still be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would go ahead and give him some kind of suffering? So there are a bunch of reasons given by the different Mefarshim. If you think about it, the number one reason, I think, based on future justification, meaning that he didn't do anything wrong, but it's some reason Hashem is doing it to spur him for the future, is because a person might, as a result of suffering, might develop abilities that he wouldn't be able to develop otherwise. I'll give you a mashal from my life. Years ago, I was a counselor in camp. And in my bunk was a 15-year-old who was a super basketball player. He was so good as a 15-year-old, as a teenager, that he was on the staff team with all the, like, the 20-year-olds. He was so good. He's a righty basketball player, had a great shot, drove to the basket. He was fantastic, fantastic. And everyone, he made the team the first, you know, when they had the first tryout, he made the team easy. And everyone was so excited, you know, we're going to have the greatest basketball team, etc. A couple of days later, Nebuch, he was playing basketball, he fell, and he broke his right arm. His arm was in a cast. Nebuch. Nebuch, suffering. What did he do? He was the sweetest, sweetest guy. What did he do wrong? Now he's going to go and lose it. You know what he did? He started going ahead. He always used to dribble with his right hand. He started walking around camp with a basketball, dribbling with his left hand. His right arm was in a cast. He couldn't do anything with it. He started learning how to shoot with his right hand. He started playing basketball, dribbling, driving left. 6 weeks later, towards the end of the summer, all of a sudden the cast comes off. This guy was a superb basketball player. Beforehand, because he only had the right hand, he always went right. So people just backed up a little bit. They overplayed him to the right. Now, all of a sudden, not only does he have a right hand, he's got a left hand. He beats you from the outside. If you go up on him, he gets around you. He's everywhere, shooting with his right hand, left hand, everything. The suffering, it was a terrible thing. Terrible. 6 weeks he lost. But as a result of that, it brought out abilities that he didn't know that he even had. He had a left hand. He had the ability to use that left hand and to shoot with his left hand. That's one approach. A second similar approach is that sometimes suffering brings us to have the proper focus in our life. Let's think for a second. Imagine, lo aleinu, which should never happen to any of us, a person goes for a regular physical to a doctor, and the doctor goes ahead and says, you know, I don't like your tests, I have to send you for some more tests, sends you for some more tests, sends you to a couple of specialists. All of a sudden, you get back the report, you come back to the doctor, the doctor says, Nebuch, I'm really sorry to share the news with you, but you have 6 months to live. 6 months to live. How does a person act then? All of a sudden, a person stops doing all the silly things that we waste our time with, and all of a sudden he starts focusing. I got 6 months to live. I want to live this life to the fullest. I want to do what I'm supposed to be doing with my time. If, let's say, at the end of those 6 months, all of a sudden, the doctor comes to you and says, new miracle cure is for your condition. Do you want it? Of course I want it. You get the cure, and you're good. Okay, now you have plenty of time left in your life. What would your reaction be? Would you go ahead and be so upset about all the anxiety and all the suffering you went through? Or would you think to yourself, wow, if you were a deep-thinking person, maybe you'd think to yourself, wow, this caused me to focus so much better on my life. I'm living my life in a much fuller and much more beautiful way. And I'll learn the lesson. Hopefully, from now on, I'll continue. Just because I had 6 months, I said to myself, I have a limited time, therefore I'm going to live my life. But now I have more time, I'm not going to go ahead and say, oh, I'll get around to it later. Do the things that are proper. Do it now. All too often, you have boys who go ahead and say, yeah, I'll become from later. When I go to Israel, I'll be from. You know, for the older chevra like me, you know, you go ahead and say, yeah, I really should be learning more. But when I retire, you know, then I'll go ahead and spend more time learning. There's no time like the moment. A person can focus. The suffering hopefully can get a person to focus that much more on how to live life in the proper way. A third approach that we find in the Svarim And the Gemara in Kedushin, the Gemara in Yuma, the Gemara in Tainus, we know that we're not perfect. No person, gentlemen, is perfect. And Tzadik Ba'aretz that doesn't go ahead and sin. There's no such thing. It's just that we view ourselves as being much better than our little sins. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is justified in going ahead and punishing us for the things that we did wrong. And it's even for our better. It's for the best for us. Why? The Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes a tzaddik for his averus in this world, so that in the next world we'll just get pure schar and everything will be great for us in the next world. So ultimately, that which we are suffering in this world is ultimately for the best, because that wipes our slate clean from all the punishments that we would have gotten for our affairs. And finally, it says in the Svarim, and Rav Tesla says, beautiful, in Michdam Elio, the Svarim say, Gemara says, that sometimes the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to us, various tragedies, Yisurim, is to go ahead and increase our schar in Olam Haba. The Gemara says, for example, in Brachos, if a person sees that tragedies come on him, a person should go ahead and yifashvesh b'masav yimashvesh b'masav. A person should go ahead and examine his deeds. Examine what he's done. See, have I done things wrong? Do I fall short? If he can't find anything, he should be told a bebitul Torah. If not, the Gemara says, it's Yisurim Shalava. What does that mean, Yisurim Shalava? Hashem wants to give you situations so that you'll increase your ability and you'll get more schar in Olam Haba. What does that mean? So Rav Desla explains it with a beautiful mashal. He says, imagine that the king was once on a trip, and he went deep into, I don't know, Africa, and there was this place, savages, they don't speak the language, and the king was on a boat, and he falls into the water, and he's about to drown. And all of a sudden, one of the savages comes, doesn't speak the language, but he goes ahead and sees the king fell into the water, he saves him, and he saves the life of the king. Saves the life of the king. The king wants to go ahead and reward him. Wants to reward him. But he can't really communicate with him. So he just has to use like hand motions and hope that the savage will go ahead and listen to him. So he goes ahead and thinks to himself, how am I going to reward him? I'll take him back to my palace. I'll go ahead and give him from my treasure houses. He'll go ahead and take from my treasure houses. So he goes ahead and he waves to the savage, come with me. They go ahead and travel back to the king's palace. They go into the king's palace. They go down to his vault. Beautiful jewels over there in the palace vault. He goes ahead and he gets sacks. He goes ahead and says, points to the savage, take this, take the savage, take the jewels, put it into the thing. Savage is thinking to himself, this is a weird reward. I went ahead and saved the king's life, and he goes ahead and he puts me to service. I'm going to go ahead and put these things in. He says, I'm not going to go ahead and do such a thing. All right, the king might get upset at me, so I'll put a little bit in. I'll put a couple of jewels in, and that'll be that. After the time, the king says, you got 10 minutes to go ahead and fill this up, whatever it is, and the savage puts in a couple of things, doesn't really want to do too much. The king goes ahead and says, okay, now, and you can go. Take it with you, you can go. So the savage says, ha, I outsmarted the king. He wanted me to schlep such a heavy load. I only have a couple of things in there, ha, ha, ha. And when I get out of the palace vicinity and there are no guards looking, I'm just going to throw this heavy load on the side and I'm just going to go back home. And that's what he does. He goes back home, and then in his savage language, he's talking to his friends and family when he gets back. You know what this king did to me? Terrible, a chutzpah. I saved his life. He takes me, makes me work and load up all this stuff, and then he wants me to go ahead and carry it back for him and do some kind of hard work like this. Ha, I outsmarted him. I didn't do it so much, and I just threw the rest of the stuff on the side. They say, you idiot. You would have had enough money for the rest of your life. You could have sold those jewels. He was really being nice to you. For the rest of time, you would have had this. That's the mashal, says Rav Dessler, about Tzadik V'Ra'lo. One of the explanations is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us Yisurim Shel Ava. He's giving us this opportunity of jewels to go ahead and increase ourselves so we'll have the ultimate schar in Olam Haba. So we've seen, gentlemen, that there are two basic justifications. There's past justification, where we say, well, maybe the person is not necessarily so good, either because we don't really know everything about the person, or because maybe it is that he's lacking in some area. He's pretty good, but he's lacking in some area. Or based on his abilities, he should have done much more than what we see that he's done, and he's getting punished for the past. Or it could be something for the future, meaning he's really good, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to make him better. Either because he's trying to bring out some ability that's been laying dormant until now that he has not been able to go ahead and bring out. Or it's because the suffering brings him to be able to be focused and live his life in the proper way, use his abilities that he has. We're getting punished for the...
That is the end of the second shir.
For the sins
for
that...
For those of you who have the chairs, the black fold-up chairs, if you could bring them to the base mattress, it would be greatly appreciated. The black folded chairs should be brought
one
to
minute,
the base
one mattress. We're not so perfect. We have some sins. We're getting punished for those sins in this world so that we'll have it totally good in the next world. Or to Yisurim Sholava.
Everybody should head to the base mattress for a Moshe Weinberger. Everybody should head to the base mattress for a Moshe Weinberger.
Yisurim Sholava. It's Yisurim Sholava to increase the schar in Olam Haba. I'll just end with an idea that I heard from my Rosh Shiva many, many times. The Chofetz Chaim says that a person should never say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing something which is bad. You're allowed to go ahead and say that it's bitter, but don't go ahead and say that's bad. Now, Rosh Shiva always would say, we wish on Rosh Hashanah to people, L'shana tova u'mesuka. You should have a good and sweet year. Seems to be repetitious. Good, sweet. Sweet is good. That's basically the same thing. Rosh Shiva would say, no. Kol ma da'avid rachmana l'tavavid. Everything Hashem does is for the good. It's just that sometimes we don't go ahead and feel it. When a doctor goes ahead and amputates somebody's limb, it's the best for the person, but it's painful. But it's saving his life. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things which are good. But we want, our tefillah to Hashem is, that should not just be good, it should also be sweet. Okay, have a pleasant day.
Sweet.
Good and sweet.